In other words, claims for dollars, the debt, grows far more quickly than the economy's ability to generate dollars, and is far larger than the amount of dollars in existence. When this becomes too much of a problem, the amount of base money is simply increased by the central bank. Base money is a liability of the central bank, and it's used as a reserve asset by commercial banks. Broad money is the liability of commercial banks, and it's used as a savings asset by the public. Treasuries are liabilities of the federal government, and they're used as collateral by the central bank and commercial banks. In other words, liabilities are collateralized by other liabilities, all the way down. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We have another excellent article today. This one is from Lynn Alden. She's had a couple of really great pieces on her newsletter recently. This is on the shorter side, so it's easy to get into. I've got another one of her longer ones on the way soon. But we're digging into, this is a recent article. I think it was from like a day or two ago, actually, if I'm not mistaken. There's no date on this. Anyway, it's at most a few days old, but it's, she's one of my go-to sources on what's happening in the capital markets and how to frame the macroeconomic environment, and which is critical to get a perspective on when the markets are, you know, absolutely collapsing or skyrocketing just on responses, just on news or rumors on what the ECB interest rates and the Fed minutes are going to be, like when these central banks are just barely whispering about what they're going to do and it's, you know, sending markets in turmoil, you know you've got a fake economy. You know you've got something where you need to understand the macroeconomic situation if you're going to try to protect yourself in this. Of course, you can always just buy a lot of Bitcoin and hold your own keys. That's kind of the number one. That's the thing of this show, right? But she always has excellent analysis, and that's why we read a lot of stuff from her on this show. And this one is great on the ECB situation specifically, so the European Central Bank, and how it's kind of unique from in comparison to like the Federal Reserve or the Bank of Japan, because none of the individual countries can print their own currency. You know, all central banks are experiencing the storm that's grown from four decades of manipulated interest rates. And as the storm finally hits, they now basically have to decide between two terrible outcomes, either horrible inflation or horrible recession. That is the dilemma of the central banks today. But why specifically is the ECB in a particularly stuck situation? Well, Lynn Alden is here to break it down for us. But real fast, let's hit our sponsors for the show today. And they are the amazing Bitbox hardware wallet, the Bitbox O2. It is the Swiss bank vault for your digital cash. A simple hardware wallet is literally the best thing you can do for your Bitcoin security. And the Bitbox O2 is exactly that. 5% off with code GUY, G-U-Y, link in the show notes. And when you stack your Bitcoin to send it to your Bitbox, use Swan Bitcoin, the best place to buy Bitcoin and the best service for anyone onboarding to Bitcoin, especially Swan Private. Like they've set this up for business accounts, for traditional retirement accounts, your 401k, and you just get access to the best team of Bitcoiners in the space with a concierge Bitcoiner service. SwanBitcoin.com/guy. I'm a heavy user of both of these guys. And lastly, the easiest way to stack sats is to get sats back on your fiat banking. I have legit switched everything over from my traditional bank to the Fold app and the Fold debit card. I have stacked just shy of 9 million sats now, and I even get even more sats back on major gift cards. I get a free daily spin, like they just have a faucet. Seriously, you have got to check out Fold. They are the way to do fiat because you get sats everywhere. Go to guyswan.com/fold for a 20% discount on their premium service. Check them all out at guyswan.com. And with that, let's get into today's read. And it's titled, The European Central Bank is Trapped. Here's Why, by Lynn Alden. Several of the major central banks are stuck in a trap of their own making. This includes the U.S. Federal Reserve, the Bank of Japan, the European Central Bank, and others. The credit-based global financial system we have constructed and participated in over the past century has to continually grow or die. It's like a game of musical chairs that we have to keep adding people and chairs to in order for it to never stop. This is because cumulative debts are far larger than the total currency supply, meaning there are more claims for currency than there is currency. As such, too many of those claims can never be allowed to be called in at once. The party must always go on. When debt is too big relative to currency and starts to get called in, new currency is created, since it costs nothing other than some keystrokes to produce. It's like this for most major countries. In other words, claims for dollars, the debt, grows far more quickly than the economy's ability to generate dollars, and is far larger than the amount of dollars in existence. When this becomes too much of a problem, the amount of base money is simply increased by the central bank. Base money is a liability of the central bank, and it's used as a reserve asset by commercial banks. Broad money is the liability of commercial banks, and it's used as a savings asset by the public. Treasuries are liabilities of the federal government, and they're used as collateral by the central bank and commercial banks. In other words, liabilities are collateralized by other liabilities, all the way down. Further reading on this: how money printing works, and what is money anyway? Central banks place guardrails on either side of that credit growth, trying and often failing to ensure that it doesn't grow too quickly into a bubble or falter into a deflationary spiral of defaults. They want smooth credit growth with perhaps some mild cycles along the way, and smooth 2% average annual currency devaluation. For decades, whenever economic growth was sluggish, central banks would reduce interest rates and encourage more credit growth, aka debt accumulation, which leads to spurts of economic growth. Whenever the economy was booming, they would increase interest rates and discourage credit growth to try to cool things off. The problem is that this level of micromanagement, with an understanding that the core system would always be bailed out if need be, contributed to higher and higher debt levels relative to GDP, both in private and public realms, and lower and lower interest rates. During the past four decades, the increase in debt over time was always offset by reductions in interest rates, so that the cost of servicing that debt never really went up. Eventually, however, major central banks all reached zero or even slightly negative interest rates, and there wasn't realistically any lower to go. Any further debt increases at that point would be hard to offset by lower interest rates. The cost of servicing the debt relative to GDP and incomes would actually start to rise. In addition, if the world ever did run into a significant setback in productivity, such as through deglobalization or underinvestment in commodities, which we are seeing now, then the resulting inflation would be hard to offset with increases in interest rates. I want to pause right here just to point out that there are a handful of charts throughout this article that I highly recommend. The link will be in the show notes. Go check these out just so you can kind of see the quantification of the situation that we are in and look at these United States, the federal funds rate of the United States and the ECB in comparison to the measured inflation rate. These charts are a little bit crazy. With that, let's jump back in. We haven't seen this level of disconnect between inflation and interest rates since the 1940s, which is the last time that sovereign debt as a percentage of GDP in the developed world was as high as it is now. So, much like the 1940s, many developed market central banks are trapped. They can't raise interest rates persistently higher than the prevailing inflation rate, and instead are stuck with slowly moving interest rates up, jawboning forward guidance, yield curve control, and trying to inflate some of the debt away. However, the European Central Bank arguably has the hardest job of all. This was very apparent in the head of the ECB, Christine Lagarde's recent interview. She was asked, quote, "How will you get the balance sheet down?" while being shown the ECB balance sheet on a screen. She answered, "It will come. It will come. In due course, it will come." The interviewer paused, confused, and then asked, "How?" And she answered, "In due course, it will come." And then smiled. She offered no answer, no description, no clarification, and had rather awkward expressions throughout the exchange. This is because, like most central banks, there is no plan. It won't come. Sovereign debt will be monetized to whatever extent it needs to be, or it'll collapse. And for the ECB, it is particularly tough, because they have to monetize debts of specific countries more so than other countries. A monetary union without a fiscal union. Countries in the euro area have given up monetary sovereignty. Instead of maintaining their own currencies, they have agreed to use a shared currency, and thus a shared central bank. This came with pros and cons, but due to the way it was structured, it has been politically unstable from the beginning. The United States can unilaterally print dollars. Japan can unilaterally print yen. Their governments can heavily influence their central banks as needed. But Italy, for example, cannot unilaterally print euros or heavily influence the ECB on its own. At first glance, this doesn't seem so different than US states. Texas, California, New York, and other states can't print dollars. So what's the big deal if euro area countries can't either? Well, the difference is that the US mostly has a shared fiscal union in addition to a shared monetary union, whereas Europe mostly does not have a shared fiscal union. US states share most of the same retirement, entitlement, and defense systems. Residents of all states pay into Medicare and Social Security as well as the US Armed Forces, which collectively constitute the vast majority of federal government spending. Citizens of the US are not citizens of any specific state. They can move freely around the country under what is mostly the same entitlement system. In contrast, these entitlement systems very much differ between European countries. At the end of the day, it's the debt difference due to this lack of fiscal union that matters. European countries had higher debt levels when they became a monetary union, and they've only gone up since then. Here are the top five U.S. states by GDP in terms of their state debt as a percentage of state GDP. California, 5%. Texas, 3%. New York, 8%. Florida, 3%. And Illinois, 7%. And here are the top five European countries by GDP in terms of their national debt as a percentage of their national GDP. Germany, 70%. France, 113%. Italy, 151%. Spain, 118%. And the Netherlands, 52%. The percentages of both US states and European countries can be increased further if we account for off-balance sheet entitlement liabilities expected to occur in the future. These are basically debts that haven't been marked to market yet. We can also include local debts in both calculations. But regardless of how we calculate it, there's a gaping difference in debt levels of U.S. states and debt levels of European countries. In the U.S., public debt is mainly at the federal level rather than the state level, whereas in Europe, public debt is mainly held at the individual country level, and they don't have individual central banks with unilateral base money creation ability. In addition, commercial banks in Europe hold individual sovereign debt as a key part of their collateral. Meaning, commercial banks in New York, for example, don't hold New York State debt as a key part of their collateral. They use treasuries as their key collateral. This shows how the situation is hardly comparable on this point. Most U.S. states do not need debt monetization by the Fed to remain solvent. At some point, some of them may run into pension insolvencies, but that's not quite as structural of an issue. Several European countries, however, do need persistent debt monetization by the European Central Bank to remain solvent year by year. And by extension, that spreads out to the whole commercial banking sector. To be clear, the U.S. has a host of problems. I've written numerous articles about how the petrodollar system has undermined U.S. manufacturing more so than the rest of the developed world, for example. Unlike Europe, the U.S. has run a structural trade deficit for decades and has a deeply negative international investment position. The U.S. is also more financialized than Europe in the sense that our stock market is big enough to affect our economy rather than just the other way around. We're so consumption-oriented, stock-oriented, and reliant on the foreign sector recycling our trade deficits into our capital markets that the, quote, tail can actually wag the dog in this sense. But in terms of the specific ability to cease sovereign debt monetization for periods of time, that's where the ECB is near the bottom of the pack compared to other central banks. It's a more complicated political issue. Robin Brooks, the chief economist at the Institute of International Finance and the former chief FX strategist at Goldman Sachs and a former senior economist at the IMF, has some of the best charts to illustrate this issue. The solvency of Italy's sovereign debt is in the hands of an entity, the ECB, that Italy has no unilateral control over. Tweet by Robin Brooks. That's a good point, but the market disagrees with you on Italy. The market sees a country that de facto hasn't been able to place net new debt in private markets for many years, relying instead indirectly on ECB QE, Blue Line, for funding. So the issue is market access for Italy. End tweet. In the long run, I can't imagine being a European investor and having sizable, long-term exposure to the currency, especially within some of the southern European jurisdictions. I'd much rather want to have real estate, profitable equities, commodities, gold, and Bitcoin than euros and euro bonds. The same is true for the US, Japan, and other countries, but with Europe, the currency comes with added tail risks, especially now that their energy security is seriously being put to the test. All right, that wraps up Lynn Alden's recent piece, The European Central Bank is Trapped, and Here is Why. And this actually falls right in line with a lot of the things we've discussed lately in trying to make sense of the current macro environment. Like, what's going on in the world? Why are, you know, the stock markets are crashing, the supply chains? Like, it is an absolute mess out there. And it's really hard to make sense of. But what's funny is that when you realize what the central banks do, it's kind of obvious. It's simply obvious that we were going to be headed into all of these problems. This is the nature of our debt system, and I want to get into a short guy's take on this and a couple of things that I highlighted from this piece. So really quick, let's hit our sponsor for today, and we'll jump back in. I am actually super happy that Fold is our sponsor for today because I totally had forgotten to do my daily spin. So we're going to do that right now. This is literally a faucet. It's full just in the app. You don't have to pay for anything. You don't have to do anything. Just open up the app, sign up, and you get free sats. And I just got 100 sats. I just got 100 sats because I'm a card holder. I got the Spin Plus card. That gets you sats back on everything that you spend ever. Like, seriously, no joke, I still have what I spent at the sports bar last night at the Bitcoin meetup. I still have to spend for that. So we're going to spend. We're going to spend right now. I could get 1% by default, which is great. But I don't know. I'm kind of feeling spinny today. I'm going to take my luck. Plus, I've saved up like a crap ton of respins. And I don't need to. 1.5%. I will take that. That is great. So what is that? What is that right now? I got 5,300 sats back for going out to the meetup and buying a few beers and hanging out with people. Understand, I don't do anything different. I simply use this card as my main driver. I've gotten over 1 million sats just this month. And I do all the same stuff and I spend all the same fiat on my bills, on going out day to day, and I get sats back. If you have not at least checked this out yet, you should. Download the Fold app. And if you get the card, if you get the premium debit card, do not forget that I have a 20% discount for you guys. Bitcoin Audible, all one word, gets you 20% off. You can check it all out at guyswan.com/fold. And with that, let's jump back in. So, talking about central banks and everything that's going on, like, it's so easy to get lost in the weeds. It's so easy to get lost talking about yield curves and the bond markets and, you know, credit, you know, interest rates, like all this stuff, and kind of forget or lose sight of the fact that their fundamental purpose is to create imbalance, is to their fundamental mechanism by which they do everything is a manipulation of the market. Not to say that other stuff isn't important. It's critical to understanding what directions they're likely to take, what the consequences will be for their actions, whether we are likely to experience inflation or massive credit deflation or stagflation, or, you know, which country is paying for the problem and which country is causing the problem, et cetera, et cetera. Like, all of these things, you do need to get into the weeds and you do need to understand those specifics. But to understand why the whole thing doesn't work is very simple. The entire purpose of the Federal Reserve, of these central banks, is to manipulate the price of debt. It is controls on the interest rate, price controls on the cost of capital over time. This is price setting. This is a command and control communist-like economy. It means that we have essentially socialism in all of these countries within the monetary and financial systems. The base structure of the system is a political, monopolistic price-setting mechanism. Price controls literally never work. Ever. They never have. They never will. Even the Keynesian economic textbooks make it clear that price controls don't work. So the Federal Reserve, these central banks, literally are doing a job poorly and with massive, horrific consequences, a task that the free market literally does perfectly, for free, at no cost, because it is the very nature of the market's existence that allows a price to emerge in the first place. So all of this is downstream from literally just the way the system is designed. And Lynn Alden even talks about this a little bit in the piece, outside of the fact that she doesn't really talk about it in the context of price controls, but that in the idea of creating money as a liability and just the nature of our fractional reserve system, like we talked about in yesterday's episode, is that you can only I have this quote. Hold on a second. Base money is a liability of the central bank, and it's used as a reserve asset by commercial banks. Broad money is the liability of commercial banks, and it's used as a savings asset by the public. Treasuries are liabilities of the federal government, and they're used as collateral by the central bank and commercial banks. In other words, liabilities are collateralized by other liabilities all the way down. This is why Everything is so interconnected. This is why all our risk exposes us to the risk of the next person in line. This is why all the dominoes are tightly, tightly stuck together. And this is the house of cards. When one thing starts to fall, it's all going to fall. And essentially the only way out of it, the only way to have the debt constantly increase, because it's the only way to grow the economy when all money is a liability, and you always owe more money back, you always have a greater number of, or a greater amount of debt and liabilities than actual money available to fulfill those liabilities. Because you're in that loop, that feedback loop of ever-growing debts and impossible to keep up supply of money, their only major tool for combating this, for actually keeping the show running, has been to lower interest rates. It's to use their price-controlling mechanism to obfuscate, to hide the cost of the debt. Lynn Alden says in the piece, she says, higher and higher debt levels relative to GDP, both in private and public realms, and lower interest rates. During the past four decades, the increase in debt over time was always offset by reductions in interest rates, so that the cost of servicing that debt never really went up. So essentially the debt burden, from the nominal perspective, from just the quantity of debt and its relationship to the GDP, how much is actual production is taking place, has constantly and consistently increased for four decades. However, the cost of servicing that debt, the cost of maintaining the new debt levels, the higher debt levels, has been hidden. It's essentially been pushed under the rug by the Federal Reserve because they have explicitly manipulated the cost of the interest rate, the cost of the debt, of maintaining the debt. This is also why housing was removed from the CPI, because what you end up seeing is, particularly in like mortgages, and any industry that is almost exclusively financed, it's almost exclusively funded, and the market is actually fueled by a debt mechanism, like by an actual creation of loans, housing being the perfect example. And this is why housing has such a crazy history over the last like 20 to 30 years. But housing, all of those items that are purchased with debt, because that is the newly issued money that moves into the economy, those prices increased far faster than anything that's actually purchased with real money. Because literally those loans are created from nothing. They are fresh money issued, backed by your promise to pay them back. This is one of those great mechanisms that just destroys the middle class, because, and why CPI moved from the actual price, the settled price of the house, to begin measuring what everybody was having to pay, which was the cost of servicing the house loan, because this is the price they can actually set. So if the price of the house went up 200%, it doesn't matter if your interest rate got cut in half. Then it appears as if CPI did nothing, that it didn't move at all, because your cost of servicing the debt, twice the debt at half the interest rate, is essentially the same. And this is how you also create a renter economy. This is how you destroy the middle class and you push everybody into a system or into a position of subservience, because you can never actually own anything. This is the build back better. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy. You will rent your entire life and it will be subject to being taken away from you, because it will be by somebody else's permission that you have anything that you have. You will not be able to own anything. They've already been doing this. This has been happening by the monetary policy for decades. Only the cantillionaires who get the money first when it's still worth what the money was originally worth, they are the ones that go out into the economy with the newly issued money, buy up all of the assets, thus they own it, but they're bidding up the prices as they spend, increasing the money supply by their effect, their distance, their lack of distance from the money printer. And that's how inflation trickles through the economy. The wealthy and the political class get and are able to spend the freshly minted money before it loses any of its value. And then their act of spending it increases the bids on all the valuable goods, on all the assets and the commodities. And slowly, everyone, the further you are from the money printer, the greater your distance of being priced out of the economy, priced out of actually owning anything that's going to sustain your life, that's going to provide you with a strong retirement, that's going to have you actually own and be a little bit sovereign in your life, and you're going to increasingly gravitate towards owning nothing and not being happy. But there's no way out of this. This is inherent to the monetary system. It's not like the only thing that they could do if they quote unquote managed it better would delay it. It's still just fundamentally broken. It's still fundamentally imbalancing and allocating resources extremely poorly. And what's crazy is, you know, Lynn Alden mentions that video. I'm not sure if you've seen that video, but the ECB video with Christine Lagarde, and she's in that interview, and they ask, you know, like, how will she shows the chart of the ECB balance sheet. And if you look at it, it's ridiculous. I'm sure you've seen it, but it's just the one that's like gradually rising and starting to curve. And then it like hits 2020, and then it's just like straight up and then barely tapering to the right. I mean, just skyrocketing balance sheet. And she straight up asked, how is this going to be undone? How can you undo this? Like, look at this trajectory. And she has no answer. She has no, it will come. It will come in due course. It will come. There is no plan. There is no master button. They know that they have no control over this stuff. It's all just theater. It's all theater in a systemically broken system. And they need to make it look like they're useful or that they are doing something, because otherwise it's just obvious that the system is fundamentally broken and the institution that makes her powerful and influential should never exist. It should not have existed in the first place. This is the end game of central banking. This is the end game of fiat money. They have no idea how to fix this because their only tool was to manipulate the price of interest and QE. And when that tool stops working because you've just pushed things so far to the edge, you've made the difference between the liabilities and the productivity so vast that there's nowhere further to go. I mean, they went to 0% interest rates. They went to both nominal and real negative interest rates. That's literally never been done before. Like, that is one of the most, it's insane how bad we let this get, and we just pretended like this was all normal. Like, they just kind of dodged everything. And they said, like, this is okay. 0% interest rates. Negative interest rates, paying people to borrow money when the thing that the economy has none of is excess capital. People think this is like normal, but really what has happened in the last 10 to 20 years is we have undergone the greatest, riskiest, most reckless economic experiment we have ever done. And we did it at a global scale. It's so crazy. And you know, if you want a, not that this will happen exactly the same way, but the reasons why are the same, is we're watching this, the insolvency and the imbalances in the crypto markets and the DeFi collateralization of collateral of liabilities on top of liabilities, et cetera, et cetera. Going back to that, that quote that it's liabilities all the way down. Liabilities are collateralized with liabilities. I think I specifically mentioned this, but like, that is crypto. That is the DeFi system. That is the stable coin, the algorithmic stable coins. Like, this is the fundamental thing. This is why I say when I look at crypto, all I see is fiat recreated with empty tokens. And if you want to dig into that, I really think probably the best piece on that topic is Only the Strong Survive by Big Al and Alan Farrington. It's so good, and they talk about essentially this exact concept. But how we've watched the cascading, the liquidations, and the cascading debt collapse, the mass defaults essentially of collateralized liabilities that were propped up in value by other liabilities, That's how our economy is. So we've seen this in crypto. We're waiting for the unraveling to happen in the fiat world, but it feels like it's coming. And there's really only, essentially, if they, raising interest rates would actually be the correct course. But the thing is that means we have to pay for the 40 years of imbalance. So it's bloody either way. Like, it's just an absolute mess either way. But raising interest rates really is the only way to save the currency. So it's a question. I mean, they're in a tight spot. The U.S. is in a tight spot, but the ECB even has it worse because they have this kind of a free rider problem regarding the ECB, because these countries have been using them basically as a get out of debt free or get out of jail free sort of card. And essentially the ones that have benefited the most of the ones are the ones that have been most irresponsible within the system, within the collection of countries. So the ECB has it, I mean, just as Lynn Alden breaks down really good in this piece, the ECB has a lot worse than the US, and the US has it terrible. The Federal Reserve is in a shit position. Literally the entire Western world, the entire modern world is in a just a nasty, nasty spot. But you know what else they could do to actually bring the prices down is to lower demand. How do you lower demand? You either make people poor or you lock down the economy. So, kind of an interesting coincidence. But Rad is going to need me. He's getting a little upset. We're going to close this one out. Great piece by Lynn Alden, really. And she's actually got another couple on her blog right now that I recommend. Check out her newsletter here. It's lynnalden.com. I'll have the link in the show notes. The one that she's got on inflation right now, what's it called? The May 2022 newsletter, Inflation or Recession. So that's the very much in line, you know, what I was just saying. But it's a really good piece, and it's much longer if you want to dig into that one to kind of get like a more concrete thinking on where we are in the economy and essentially what our routes out of this are. Going to be a crazy time. It is a crazy time. Markets are going nuts. And we will be covering it and exploring it and reading all the different theories and how it relates to Bitcoin right here on Bitcoin Audible. Thank you guys so much. Thank you to the Fold Card. Thank you to Swan Bitcoin. Thank you to the Bitbox Hardware Wallet, all for sponsoring and making this show possible. And to Rad for adding our ambiance in the background. And I will catch you next time on Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, and until then, everybody, take it easy, guys. You have been listening to Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.